We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is In the Know, the Bourbon Street Shots podcast. It's all Pelicans, all the time.
And welcome to the show. The Pelicans have done quite a bit since we last talked, Michael. We've had trades, we've had awful losses, we managed to pull out a win that was looking like it might be an awful loss, but the thing we need to talk about most, out of all the stuff that's happened since our last podcast, has got to be the end of the Dante Cunningham era.
Mm. Yeah, but he helped us one final time on the way out as he let AD execute lob after lob after lob after dunk over his face against him. That was so nice for him to give us that yesterday. But yeah, Dante is gone. And I don't know how we're going to carry on, but we have to.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't shed any tears. I was so happy to see him go. Like, yeah. And here's the stupidest thing about it, too. Like, name the last time you had a team that lose a starter who basically plays 22 to 24 minutes a game, is a major part of your rotation, and you trade him for nothing. Literally nothing, and everybody's fine with it and happy.
I mean, you got. I know I've already had a Rashad Vaughn jersey printed up. I think that's going to be a collector's item years from now.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, he passed a physical with us. Like, that was major. So we did get Vaughn at least name only for like a day and a half.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
and now I think he's on to play with the Lithuanian team that the Bulls play for.
Yeah, but no, this guy is starting. He's playing close to 40 minutes some games, and essentially you trade him to clear $400,000, you know, to get a little further away from the Lux tax. So that tells you how desperate they were to play Dante, and they don't have to anymore, but, I mean, obviously the big trade, and I'm sure it seems like so long ago for other people, but we kind of wanted to wait for everything to play out. But Pelicans move Amir Ashik, Jameer Nelson, Tony Allen, and their first-round pick, basically protected top five this upcoming year for Nikola Mirotic, who's on a pretty good contract, makes $12.5 million this year, going to make $12.5 million next year. shooting well from beyond the arc when he came here. Was probably having his best year so far after coming back from the Bobby Portis altercation. So when you first heard it, I mean, I guess it was going to go through, and then it didn't, and then it eventually did. But once you saw all the details of the trade, what was your reaction?
I thought it was pretty fair for both sides, honestly. Like, this is like, everybody wants to be on in a trade where your side wins clearly. I think Chicago got exactly what they wanted. I think the Pelicans got exactly what they wanted. And when you take a look at the landscape of other trades that are maybe out there, I didn't see any that I thought were better than Mirotić, really. Like, you could argue that there's a couple other players you could have gone out there that might have fit better with the team, but as a, just the available players that you could get with what the Pelicans gave away, I think Mirotić was about as good as you could get. So there's always these people out there who are fantasizing over someone like Kemba Walker, but that wasn't happening. There's just no way that was happening. Not unless they're giving up, like, all their draft picks in the future of some sort. So Mirotić was a very good pickup. He fills a monster hole. And honestly, he's fast becoming one of my favorite Pelicans already. And after, what, three games? Is it three total games he's played?
I think four.
Four.
Yes, did three. Yeah, played four.
So, I mean, just watching him play, he works like a dog. He's always in the right spot. He's battling for rebounds, which, when was the last time we saw one of our guys, like, slip into place to get a rebound around somebody and battle for that thing? It's been a while.
Yeah, he's a smart player. I guess my curiosity is, what do you think the likelihood is that this exact trade goes down if Boogie doesn't get hurt before the break, as opposed to maybe a wing or a guard? Do you think that of all the possible trades out there, this is still the one that they take?
So without knowing exactly what else they had on hand, I'm going to say yes. I think this is still what they would go after, because Mirotić is, we've said before that, you know, they need to figure out rotations. Mirotić can play next to either of those guys pretty well, and he can also, you know, in a pinch, play some small forward if you have to and fill that hole that Hill's not filling yet. And I think as far as just you go out and try to get the best talent you can, and even if it didn't work out, like, let's say, you know, Boogie was in perfectly good health and, you know, Mirotić isn't getting enough minutes and he starts getting unhappy, you can move Mirotić so easily. Like, all the reasons why we were talking about Oshik's contract next year actually turning into a pretty nice chip with the tight salary that's out there. Like, so few teams are going to have any cap that they're going to trade for expirings just so they can have some freedom in the summer. Mirotić is even better. He has no guaranteed money the year after. So he is a great trade chip next year. He's a way better player than, you know, we could have gotten for the most of those packages. And I think that's pretty much what we should be going after. Like, did you see a guard out there that would have a wing that would have a bigger impact on this team that you could get for a similar package? I can't think of one.
Yeah, no, I think he was the best player kind of floated around in that range. You know, and one that bled into the second year. So maybe you could argue that Tyreek, you know, the way he's playing this year could have a similar impact in a different way, but he's not a guy under contract for the next year. So, you know, a guy for multiple years, you know, and a good contract. And honestly, I'm more excited about Mirotic's second year here now with what's going on. Like, yeah, he could help this team now and perhaps be the difference between them getting in the playoffs and being a 9th or 10th seed. But what I really like is, you know, we've seen it happen with this team too much where they rush people back. I think they kind of eventually learn their lesson with Holiday. But if you have Mirotić and Davis and, you know, maybe if you get really lucky and Diallo finishes this year where he's playing well enough to where he could be a constant rotation player, now you could really take your time with Cousins coming into next year and, you know, biding time, making sure you don't play him on back-to-backs, keeping to a limit, to a minute restriction where, you know, if it's, if Cousins comes back November 15th and they're already four games under 500, you know, just the pressure that some of that this team might feel to make sure to get him back on the court and then play him big minutes. You know, I think with Mirotić here now, you don't have to worry about it. You have two really good bigs, you know, that could start for a lot of teams, and you could kind of ease Cousins back in slowly next year, and really not rack up his minutes throughout the season. So I think I'm more excited about Mirotić next season than even what he's going to give us this year.
So is he the third best player on the team, second best player on the team? Who do you think is more important, him or Drew?
Oh, Drew, just because of the perimeter defense. But I think Mirotić has a chance to be that guy who swings games more often than Drew. But I think Drew, like if I were to say which one, if one of them got hurt or was out for a couple of games, you know, which would it be harder to win without? It would really be a struggle to win without Drew at this point with how much they're relying on him, you know, to create shots and then also to defend. But, you know, I think Mirotić in a lot of ways is a more explosive offensive player and then also brings an energy that this team really needs as well. So it's pretty close, but I'd still give it to Drew.
Okay. I was just wondering how you were feeling about Mirotić and if he's growing on you. So...
Not as fast as his beard, but no, I mean, I think he's a very good player. I think he's a top 30 type of offensive player when he's on. And I think, like, people who are intensely skilled don't get, you know, the credit of being hustle guys. But, like, it's almost like if you took Jason Smith's hustle and tenacity, and then actually put it in the body of a very skilled player. So I think that is the part that you're falling in love with is just the fact that even though this guy is incredibly skilled and we've seen guys kind of coast and just get by on their talent, Mirotić still plays and hustles and moves and screens like he's a guy terrified of losing a roster spot. So I think he's a great combination of those two things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let me...
another part of that trade was Tony Allen. Are you sad to see him go? I know he was also becoming one of your favorites just for shenanigan purposes.
So I never got as down on Tony Allen as you did. I thought Tony Allen actually did some pretty good stuff out there. But, you know, if Tony Allen... Tony Allen is the guy who is like your 10th man or 11th man, where he comes in, and if he doesn't destroy your team and he provides moments of entertainment, that's perfect, which is what he was. But anyone who would tell you that they would save their 10th man so that they wouldn't have to trade and acquire the fourth best player on their team, they're an idiot. So, yeah, like you trade as many 10th men as you can to get that guy.
Yeah,
technically, the Pelicans, what, traded their 15th man and their 10th man? I guess Ajinsa's the 15th man, though. So 14th man and their 10th man. And, I mean, Junior Nelson, I guess, ended up being like 8th. So.
Yeah, no, I mean, if this team was fully healthy from the start throughout the year, I would think all three of those guys would have trouble playing at all. I don't think any of those guys are rotation players if this team was healthy and competing, but I thought Allen was trash this year. I'm gonna even be surprised if he gets picked up by somebody or, you know, if he plays any kind of significant minutes. I think he's done. Jameer had a couple good games and filled in a couple of times, so you know, best wishes to him outside of this game coming up tomorrow against Detroit. But I think the other part of the deal is you know, that we got to touch on a little bit is kind of how it played out over these 48 to 72 hours from when it got first reported that it was in the serious stages to all of a sudden it had fallen apart. And then it was resurrected. And essentially what sounds like happened is they had this framework of a deal that they wound up completing where it was, you know, the three guys that they sent out for Mirotić and, you know, the Pelicans talked about the flexibility of Mirotić not opting in because essentially with their roster as it is, it would put them above the Lux tax going into next year. So then they came back and said, you know, if he doesn't want to opt out of next year's contract, then you guys take Ajinsa and we'll do the deal and be fine. The Bulls say, you know, no, we're not going to do that. And there's this kind of posturing for about 48 hours. And then the compromise became, you know, pretty good for both teams where the Pelicans got their second round pick back, which is probably a $1.5 to $2 million asset at the end of the day. And it's something that will help them, you know, possibly unload Ajinsa this summer. So, you know, I thought it was a fair compromise for both teams, but if push really, really came to shove and the deadline's getting closer and closer, do you think the Bulls would have been willing to lose this deal and the first round pick because of an extra couple million dollars for taking on Ajinsa next year?
No. Well, maybe. So, because Ajinsa's, Ajinsa is additional salary for a whole nother year, and they may just have like a cutoff point. I have a hard time thinking that if you played down to the wire that they would turn it down, but why take that risk when I'm pretty certain that our front office, what they just wanted was their second round pick back, and Ajinsa was the start high. Like everybody knows when you do a negotiation, you don't come in at what you want. You come in higher than what you want, and then you end up where you want to be. And I think they absolutely did that, and they've done that before with Boogie Cousins in Sacramento, where they came in, they got the little piece of information from the agent that allowed them to go back and say, hey, this isn't what we want, so give us something else. Let's change something here, and put the pressure on, and eventually got a little bit closer, you know, got the price down. And that's exactly what you're supposed to do in these kinds of trades, and I think it played out pretty well for them.
Yeah, I'm just curious if they would have gone the extra step, because to me, if you're Chicago, you know, we saw how few first-round picks were given out at this deadline. I think Cleveland was the only other team to give one, right? And that's a late first-round pick. I mean, there's still a pretty good chance right now that the Pelicans' first-rounder could be a lottery pick. So where else is Chicago getting that pick from? And you're telling me at the end of the day they're going to give up that pick so they don't have to pay Ajinsa $5 million next year when they're so far below the cap. They're not exactly attracting LeBron last summer. So I would have been curious to see if you played all the way up to the deadline. But, you know, for Dell to be able to squeeze out that extra second round pick, which again could come in handy this summer, could be similar to what he did with Pondexter, where you basically give up a second rounder or two and some cash to get rid of Ajinsa if you're really dying to get below that luxury tax or have as small of a luxury tax bill as possible. Considering
the number of teams that are going to have salary cap this offseason, I would find it extremely funny if this offseason we trade Ajinsa and the second round pick to Chicago to clear space.
Yeah, and I think it'll even take more than that. I mean, again, I see the second round pick is like, let's say $1.5 to $2 million asset. I think you have to trade two of them in cash to get off of Ajinsa's contract, but at least you're $1.5 million closer than you would have been if you didn't hold out a little longer and get this pick. So I think Dell did a good job in the trade. I think that, you know, getting Mirotić helps you this year, but really what I'm excited about is the fact that you're going to bring Cousins back, and now you don't, you know, feel the need to rush him back.
So let me ask this other question about the other trade that almost went down for Ennis in Memphis. Now, this is the feel it has to me. You tell me if you think it's right or not. it feels to me that Memphis probably had a trade, had the trade in place with the Pelicans. They wanted to get the terms of it out so that other teams who might be interested in Ennis can call up and maybe make a better offer. So they let it leak and waited to see what came in and then liked what Detroit offered better. That's what it felt like to me. Do you think that's kind of what happened?
I don't. So you think the Pelicans were talking to Memphis about Ennis?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't feel that way. I didn't think that was going on at all.
Okay.
No, I mean, the deal that Dell had been working on was Dante for Bryce Johnson in the second round pick. And, yeah, I definitely think Detroit leaked that and then got a better player in James Ennis.
Okay.
But no, Dell's entire plan was to get off of Dante's money as much as possible. And, you know, just so people know, that pick wound up being a 2022 pick from Detroit, so it's nothing great, but Dell's whole plan going into that last day was to trade Dante for as little salary as he could get back to get further away from the luxury tax and, you know, and the hard cap to be able to sign more players. So Bryce Johnson, I believe, is making $1.5 million this year, Rashad Vaughn, 1.9. So eventually Dell trades, you know, Dante for Rashad Vaughn and gets himself an extra $400,000 in wiggle room, but it could have been $800,000 if, you know, it had gone through with the original trade with Detroit and then, you know, picked up a 2022 second round pick. But the big goal there was to get Dante out, who had basically, you know, in no uncertain terms, been asked to be traded and just get out of there. And Dell wanted to take back as little salary as possible. So that way he would have, one, an additional roster spot, and two, a little additional money to sign somebody to come in for the rest of the season.
Right. And so now he does basically – so here's the one thing I wanted to bring up, and I mentioned it kind of at the beginning. Dante Cunningham – so – Mirotić, his role is to absorb the Cousins minutes. So, and that's a tall order. Like, Cousins already was absorbing a huge, like, I think it was like fifth in the league in minutes played already. So, Mirotić coming in and absorbing those minutes is probably not even necessarily realistic to think he's going to do that much. So far he is. He's averaging 36 and a half minutes, though that's with a double overtime game in there. But trading Dante as well has left a giant gap in this team's, you know, wing power forward kind of rotation. So he needs that money to go and shore it up. And I don't know when Hill is going to be ready. The idea is that he'll come in after the All-Star break, but can you really rely on a guy coming off of that kind of injury to play big minutes early on? Probably not. So they need a bunch of room to sign these guys on the wing. How do you expect them to just start going out and grabbing guys from overseas, from the D League, and just trying them out for that role? Do you think Diallo's just, we've already seen him get minutes, and do you think they're going to continue to feed him those minutes? Or do you think they're going to go try to find somebody to take those minutes who can you know, do be like a Terrence Jones kind of role?
Yeah, I think that's the great unanswered question is Solomon Hill. I mean, I think it would be insane to expect Solomon Hill to come back and just jump right back in 30, 35 minutes and play fairly well. But over those last 20, 25 games, is he going to give you 0 minutes or is he going to give you, you know, 25 a night and maybe with back-to-back restrictions? So I think you kind of start there. I think you also look at guys like Darius Miller eating a couple more minutes. Ian Clark's probably eating more minutes as we're getting into playing three guards more. And then we saw them try to give DeAndre Liggins first a bigger role and then, you know, possibly more minutes as well, though they tailored that back for the Brooklyn game. But, yeah, I think that is what they're going to do. I mean, basically – from here on out, signing a guy for the rest of the season, just to give people an idea, the Pelicans have about $1.2-1.3 million to spend in wiggle room. A 10-day contract, each one will cost you a little over $80,000. So let's say they just do all 10-day contracts moving forward. You could do, what is that, about 15 of those, and just keep trying out guys for 10 days.
The thing is, though, you can't bring in a guy for more than two 10-day contracts. So this would literally be a revolving door.
Exactly. And we've seen them do that before when they had, you know, all the scrub point guards that they just kept bringing in, and the Nate Walters, and then, you know, I don't even remember all of them, but, so yeah, they could just.
Gal Meckel. Yep,
that's right. yeah, so I mean, they could just keep bringing in 10-day guys, trying them, maybe hope one, you know, is lightning in a bottle, and then doing what they did with Liggins, where you basically sign him for the rest of the year, and then for giving him that security, what he gives you back is a second year team option where, you know, if you do hit lightning in a bottle, now you have a guy at a little more from the minimum going into next year. So that's one. They could find a guy that they like, and if they sign a guy for the rest of the year, it's about $500,000. So they could just identify two guys that they like, sign them for the rest of the year. Let's say that they're, you know, vets that everybody's kind of throwing out that offer. If they want to bring in Jarrett Jack and Andrew Bogut, for instance, they could go do that. So, I think they have a couple different paths. I think to me, I wouldn't get the veteran path because the only way they're going to get, let's say, one of these veteran buyout guys, like I see Joe Johnson get waived and every, you know, people on Twitter are like, oh, he'd be so good as a Pelican. Yeah, no shit, but he's not coming here. Like, nobody that anybody else wants is going to come to the Pelicans. Basically, what you're going to get is the guy who gets waived that, like, literally nobody else wants. So if Mario Chalmers gets waived, maybe you got a shot. Jarrett Jack, maybe you got a shot. Because none of the real contenders are going to, you know, want somebody of that caliber. But I would go the other way. I'd go G League. I'd go Europe. I'd find a really hungry guy. Basically find another Darius Miller. Just get him now instead of waiting to the off season. You know, Michael Jordan Crawford from last year, something like that, and hope to strike lightning in a bottle. I wouldn't be waiting for these vets to be bought up just to be rejected. I would be going the hungry, give a guy a second chance. Not some 21, 22-year-old, but 25 to 29-year-old that's hungry, got a taste of the NBA, didn't do well, but now is, you know, playing a little better, and you give him a second chance and hope to catch lightning in a bottle.
So you've been a proponent for a long time of giving Diallo minutes. And I know maybe you don't think that that's going to be like the long-term thing that the Gentry wants to do, but if you're Dell and you have the option of forcing Gentry to have to play Diallo by just not giving him another alternative, or going and finding someone who you know that Dell's probably going to play over Diallo, which route are you going?
I would give minutes to Diallo. I wouldn't bring in a big man from anywhere. I would strictly be looking for guards, wings, perimeter players with these slots. I'm fine with Diallo getting the minutes. I need to find out now if he's going to be another rotation guy next year that allows me to bring Cousins back slowly. I also, you know, I've got to start building up somebody on my roster's trade market. Like, if my owner tells me I can't pay the tax, well, I've got to start thinking about what I'm going to attach to a Solomon Hill contract in order to get out of it. So, I think it serves multiple purposes giving Diallo minutes. So I would not sign a big man for me. Whether it's 10-day contracts or for rest of the season, wherever, I am going strictly after guards, playmakers, wings, athletic guys. I'm not going after bigs whatsoever.
Okay. Should all the people who are on Twitter feeling insulted by Mike James asking to be let out so he can go play in Europe be insulted?
No, I mean, I know with the way it looks and then the mystery of, you know, why Dante wanted out all of a sudden, it looks like what's going on here, everybody wants out. You know, Mike James was not getting minutes. It was obvious that there was no real future for him there, and, you know, he actually wanted to go play basketball overseas, and, you know, that's fine. The Dante situation, it wasn't a big deal. Essentially what had happened there is, so you got to remember, Dante came to New Orleans as kind of this mid-range shooter, hustle guy, you know, and he was finding his niche in the NBA. The Pelicans gave him a chance when, you know, when there was some possible domestic abuse allegations that were unfounded, it seems like, but the Pelicans gave him a chance. He came in. Well, as he started working with the staff, you know, they would tell him, according to his accounts, that, well, you know, you work on your 3-point shot. You know, you step back a couple of feet and you start hitting that 3-pointer. And all of a sudden, wait till you see the contract offers you get, and you're going to be a $5, $6, $7, $8 million player annually. Just, you know, hit the three, step, change your game a little bit. And he did those things. He didn't do them incredibly well, but he did change his game, and he became a pretty good 3-point shooter at least last year. And then he gets out into the free agent market, and not only are the Pelicans not clamping at the bid to give him, you know, this long-term contract at $5, $6, $7 million a year that, again, he had been hearing that if he only does this, this, and this, he's going to get. And then he sees Solomon Hill go, you know, get 4 years, $50 million, and come in on this team, and he sees himself in his eyes as a similar player. So anyway, all of that happens. And, you know, then Dante's looking around and nobody really wants him. And then a couple teams offer the minimum. The Pelicans get him by offering him a little bit more than that. But, you know, I mean, I get it. We got to realize everybody else's reality is different than ours. And I guess through his eyes, I could see the frustration there. But it wasn't some big culture problem that everybody's now wanting to get out of New Orleans. But, you know, in Dante's point of view, maybe some promises were made to him that weren't kept, so it was just time for him to leave. So, you know, Dell got rid of him and got an extra $400,000. So that's that, and Mike James is just a separate issue. But, no, I don't think people should be worried that everybody just wants to flee New Orleans and Anthony Davis is next.
Yeah, and I mean, the thing I got to say about Dante is, I mean, when outsiders look at this, they say, well, you know, he's still making $2.3 million or whatever it was right around there. Like, that's so much money. Who cares? Like, but he had a guaranteed contract of $3 million for this season that he turned down.
Yeah.
And he went on the market. And the Pelicans basically went to him and basically, like you said, we're saying you're going to be great. You're going to be, everybody's going to want you. And he comes back and he's like, okay, well, you know, hey, I'm not getting the offers I want, you know, pay me. And they're like, sure. You're wonderful. You're wonderful. You're wonderful. Here's a 25% pay cut. And then we'll bring you back. And if you just think about your job, if somebody did that, you like, They talk you up, and then you walk away from what you did before, and you look at it, and you come back, and they're gonna screw you. Like, that's how you're gonna look at it. That's not gonna. I mean, even if in your mind you're still gonna try hard, it's still got a eat at you. And people are people, so.
Yeah, and from the Pelicans' perspective,
I can't even blame them.
But from the Pelicans' perspective, I would guarantee they don't feel like they were misleading him. I bet that they really believe that when a stretch four hit 40% of his 3-pointers the year before, especially as crazy as we saw the market the last 2 years, I bet they genuinely believed that they were going to lose him and he was going to get something like 2 years, $12 million. So I don't think they did anything dirty on their end, but I completely understand why Dante would feel, you know, slighted and lied to and yada, yada, yada.
Right. And I also challenge anyone, if you go back and listen to any of the league-wide like podcasts or articles where they talk about free agents, Dante Cunningham was like second tier stretch four. Whenever somebody wanted to come up with a stretch four who wasn't going to make $10 million, they always seemed to gravitate towards Dante Cunningham. So I think there's a whole lot of feeling around the league just in general that his market was going to be set at like $5 million a year. So
yeah, and it fell through the cracks and the money wasn't there, you know. Yep.
All right, that's enough talking about Dante, and I'm glad I never talked about him again.
Yeah. What would you go at? Would you wait on these buyouts and see what you could get? Would you go identify the best players in Europe that want to come back, G League? What would you be looking for with these roster spots, position-wise, skill-wise, and kind of level of player-wise?
So I am going all in on a larger wing. I would just look all over the place and try to find that. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you I know who the best players in the G League are. I don't have, like, the only time I ever look at G League rosters is if I'm trying to just find somebody. And even then I have never watched a minute of their games, and you know what that means. So I can't tell you who the appropriate role player is, but I would want somebody who shows tenacity, is larger, and can defend, and I honestly don't give a crap if they can hit a shot, because I only want them to come in and play for like 15 minutes. They have to be able to run, make layups, handle the ball a little bit, so they're not going to dribble it off their foot, and be an energy defenseman. That's all I'm looking for on the wing.
Would you be looking for a guy who's, you know, been in the NBA before, and now this is a second try, somebody who's at their last chance, or would you be looking for some 22-year-old guy who went undrafted, never been in the league before, but is super athletic and hungry?
I would be looking. So it feels like the guys who come in and actually show some success are the guys who had some questions about whether they could put it together in the late, you know, so they get drafted like in the late teens and the 20s, sometimes early in the second round. And they make it to training camp, and maybe they make it onto a roster, but they don't play, and then they're cut, and they have to go somewhere else and carve their way out. That's the kind of person I'm looking for. Because those guys, like, you're giving them their first real chance at the NBA since they flamed out, and so they're going to come in hungry to show that, hey, I deserve to be here all along. That's the kind of guy I'm looking for.
Yeah, to me, that I agree. Like, that's the one that seems to succeed. Like, Danny Green on his fifth try, and, you know, what we've seen with Darius Miller this year. And I would see the excitement and potential of, like, the 22-year-old guy. And we gave some guys some chances like that last year, like an Anthony Brown and, you know, whatever. But to me, the ones that seem to stick are the ones who kind of get passed around in the NBA a couple times. They know the professionalism of, you know, the travel and the work, and they, you know, you don't have to introduce them to that part of the league. And then, you know, eventually they just get it. Like a Jonathan Simmons is another type. Just the older guys who it might be their last chance, as opposed
to,
yeah, PJ Tucker. So that's exactly what I'd be looking for. I'm still of the mind that, you know, this team has so many guys that need to get a play or the ball set up for them. Like, if you get them the ball in the right spot and they're open enough, they're going to make the shot. But I still don't see who creates their own points on this team. Like, even in a lot of ways, Anthony Davis doesn't. Not really well, at least. Hey, you looked at that Brooklyn game last night. The only guy who could really create his own at the end when they needed it was Drew. So to me, that's still the number one thing I'm looking for. And so I'm targeting a couple guys like that. One guy in Europe that I would love to give another chance to, is actually starting to play really well, is Roddy Bubois. I mean, I remember the Dallas days when he was an quote-unquote untouchable.
That's right.
Where they wouldn't trade him for anything, and then about 18 months later, he was out of the league. But he's gone over to the Euro League. He's, you know, he's hitting over 40% of his threes. He's always been long, quick. So somebody like that, there's a guy in the G League named Walter Lemon Jr. that if you get a chance, just watch some of his highlights. But again, he's in his mid-20s. He's really hungry. He's probably, you know, right at about his last shot. But that's what I would be looking for. Guards, wings, but guys, you know, who are in their mid-20s, maybe even, you know, 27, 28, who are just who are ultra hungry in their last chance and have kind of been a professional for a couple of years. So, you know, that would be it. As far as like veterans, maybe if you waited out, he didn't play last night. Maybe the Lakers cut Channing Frye and a couple teams go after him, but he chooses the Pelicans because of Gentry. But even that, I would think, is a long shot. I wouldn't be waiting on that. I would just go identify a couple guys from EuroLeague and G League and make aggressive offers and then hope I hit not only on this year, but that, you know, I could roll them into next year as well on a cheap deal.
Yeah. No interest in bringing Terrence Jones back?
No. Like I said, I do not want to give – I don't want to be – I mean, I think he'll – is going to play back, come back, and play as much four as he does three. So I'm totally good with my my big man minutes. I want to get some guards and wings in, and again, guys that could carry over next year. If you get a guy that helps you out down the stretch this year, are you really going to roll him into next year? You know, when you're going to have four bigs on the team already that you're going to give minutes to? I don't think so, but I think you could have rotation minutes for a guard or a wing if you hit on a guy this year that, you know, maybe becomes the next Jonathan Simmons or, you know, all hope Danny Green. So I would definitely go guard or wing.
Right. Okay, I have a question for you. Since Boogie went down, there has been a lot of declining play from a lot of different players on this team. And I want you to rank. I'm going to give you four players, and you have to rank them as in who is most impacted by Boogie leaving, and just rank them in order. And leaving is kind of a dumb way. Boogie getting injured, okay? So here are the players who I feel like have declined significantly since he left. Ian Clark, Darius Miller, Etuan Moore, and your good old buddy, DeAndre Liggins.
I think Miller long-term is going to be the most affected by Boogie. I think all the space that Boogie created, you know, all of the attention, I should say, that he attracted along with AD, just got Miller open for these looks. They ran elevator with Boogie and AD setting picks for him. I just think that guy was getting shots that he'll get occasionally now, but not all the time. And if he's not getting those looks, like, there's really not much else he could do offensively. It's a decent little, you know, pump fake, one dribble, mid-range shot. But, like, Moore could get to the basket. Ian Clark was up and down regardless. I think Miller is going to be the guy that, you know, we look back and we go, man, Miller was really playing well. He looked like the steal of the year for Dell. And then all of a sudden it felt like he dropped off, and people will say that it'll be regression to the mean. But I really think it'll have a lot to do with Boogie, because I just don't think he's going to get the looks he got earlier in the year.
Okay. I don't know. I'm torn between Miller and Ian Clark. I think Ian really did take advantage of Boogie's passing, and his ability to cut and get those easy baskets helped him out tremendously. But I will just say this flat out. you're wrong. The actual person who's most impacted by Cousins leaving is Anthony Davis, because he has looked like he hasn't given a crap for, I don't know, a week and a half now. Like, it feels like his big bro went down, and he's just kind of like, I'll play, but whatever. Like, it takes a lot for me to get, like, really annoyed by one of the best players on my team, but I'm starting to feel it here and there where I'm just like, come on, dude, give a crap.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is just seemingly that he's mentally broken, and I don't get it because, you know, you hear all the things, you know, how many times have we heard the rhetoric of, well, AD came into my office, you know, and told me, whatever you need from me, coach, I'm willing to do. I want to win. And, you know, he said those things, and then he wanted to be more of a leader and more vocal. But now Boogie goes down, and it's basically, well, our season's over. Screw it. And, you know, even when he plays well, like you see the Brooklyn game, you know, I mean, that game, a lot of things pissed me off. One of the things that pissed me off the most was when he hit that half-court shot, and, like, Diallo's, like, wanting to celebrate. His teammates are all excited, and he just kind of walks back to the bench with his head down and, yeah, whatever, okay, move on to the next play. Like, you've got to provide your team with some energy, excitement. Like, have you ever seen another team go on an 8-point run and Gentry calls a timeout and AD come back to the huddle and say anything to anybody ever, you know, or any kind of pump up or let's get going or forget about that last shot or whatever? Like, yeah, I agree with you. It's just overall attitude and him always saying he wants to take that next step as a leader, and then now here's your chance as your, you know, partner in crime goes down, and you're just going to walk around and sulk, and, you know, I'm not a huge fan. I haven't been, and my only hope is that he basically gets to the All-Star break, gets refreshed, gets rejuvenated, you know, kind of gets re-energized by some of the All-Stars and seeing that he could play with them and against them and wants to play him in the playoffs, and then he comes back after the All-Star break kind of with a new attitude. But I don't know how much I hope that could happen, but that's the only thing that I'm hoping could kind of pull him out of it.
Yeah, and I mean, I will defend him and say that early this year I did feel like he was more engaged and getting his teammates trying to, like, be on top of them a little more. But I've never really thought of him as a guy who's going to get on anyone really anyways. He's more of a, when things are going well, I'm going to celebrate and have a good time with you, and we're all going to have a grin and we're going to party. And, but when things are not going so well, I think he's just going to kind of be like, yeah, well, I'll do what I can. And
Yeah,
and I mean that might be kind of healthy mentally, but if you want a killer in the NBA, that's not what you want.
Yeah, and again, maybe you get to the All-Star break and then you get refreshed and you're like, all right, 25 games to go, I'm going to go balls to the wall, and, you know, maybe he does come out like that. So we'll see. I think I want to see how February finishes and how he moves into March, and then you know, I'll give a better assessment. But yeah, it seemed like they came out in that first half of the Clippers game, right after Boogie got hurt, and they were like, all right, we're going to play for Boogie, and they all the energy. And then they wound up losing that game. And then, you know, part of me wonders if AD tells himself something like, you know, no matter how well we play, we're not winning the championship this year. And like, if that kind of finality just kind of creeps in, and then you start to wonder why I'm going to go all out for a year we can't win the title. But shit, like, you know, and people like us will say you weren't going to win the title anyway. Athletes are delusional and they don't believe that. They, you know, they believe that they had a shot if they figured things out, but now they know they're not winning a title. And, you know, but get into the playoffs, like, win a playoff game. You are You've been in the league how long now, and you haven't won a single playoff game yet? So just do that. Make that your championship. Like, I don't know. I think you should have a little bit more pride than that. But I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt through the All-Star break. And then, let's talk at the end of February and see kind of where his head's at.
I had one general thing I wanted to ask you about, and then we can move on to the games that are coming up. But Cleveland made a buttload of trades. They got rid of all the people who seemed to be poisonous in the locker room, brought in a whole fresh set of people. But the one question I had, I'm not even going to like get into the individual players. There's a group of people who comment on trades who will kill Cleveland because of the trade that they made with the Lakers and the fact that the pick went out and they thought it was a monster overpay. And then there are the group of people who say, well, hey, here is what Cleveland sent out in totality, and this is what they got in totality. So this is their new team and this is their old team, and maybe I feel good about that. Which is the appropriate way to look at that? Should you take each individual trade and try to squeeze every single bit of juice out of it you can, and that's the only way to consider this? Or do you really want to look at the all-in set of moves that led up to this deadline to create the team that they hope will take them back to the finals?
I'm always a all-in set of moves person as long as they're connected, which these have to be. Like, it's not like they did the Lakers trade with no idea that another trade was going to happen and then stumbled upon it later, because these trades build up for months. So to me, when it's a situation like that, I look at the totality to where, you know, if they don't do the Lakers trade and give up that pick, if that's what it takes, but they still do the George Hill trade, and then maybe they could have got a little bit more for their first-round pick and expirings elsewhere, but it wouldn't have fit as well with what they're getting in the other trade. So I'm fine looking at that day in totality and just looking at assets out, assets in. If I were really, really dissecting it, maybe I think it would have been fair for the Lakers to send an extra second, you know, a future second round pick back. But I think it's really getting nitpicky if you're hanging on to the Cavs giving up the 26th pick. I mean, to me, you're basically giving it up for Larry Nance, and that's where Larry Nance was drafted, and I think he's outperformed his draft position. So I'm totally fine with them giving that up.
Right. And the thing that I always think is funny is people are talking about how Jordan Clarkson isn't that good of a player. Has anyone watched Iman Shumpert play recently?
Yeah.
Anyone seen just how god-awful that he is? I take Clarkson hands down. At least he can make a shot.
I think all of these things, like, I think outside of the 30 best players and the 100 worst players, like, the rest of that middle, what would that be, about 300 players? I think those guys are so dependent on the role. I think it's so stupid when people call somebody a great, you know, a good player, a bad player, or whatever, when they're in that middle. Like Avery Bradley, are you really telling me that he just got that much worse as a basketball player? Of course not. He was in Boston in a system, you know, that fit his skill set, not asked to do too much, and then, you know, not asked to do too little. Like, he was asked to do exactly what he can do in a system that worked for him, and he played well. Then he goes to Detroit, probably asked to do a little bit more than he can or, you know, wanted to, and now all of a sudden his numbers aren't as good. But when people act like players are good or bad, like Jordan Clarkson in 8 situations is probably an above-average you know, third guard. In 10 situations, he's probably a below average second guard that's being asked to do too much, and so on and so forth. Like, it cracks me up when people just have these definitive ideas of what a player is when so many of them are dependent on the situation. And if you're a GM and you say, well, that guy is obviously in the wrong situation, but he'd be in a perfect one on my team because I have a playmaking small forward, so he could defend guards, but he could play off the ball on offense, then you go ahead and trade for the guy. It's not just as simple as a guy's good or a guy stinks.
And just point, you just made it, Mirotić. I want people to start paying attention to the plays that they're running for him. You will see a lot of them look very similar to the plays they were running for Boogie. And I think that Mirotić's ability to both play on the perimeter and do stuff from the mid post made him a really obvious fit for them to go out and be able to run the same sorts of plays. Now they're not going to put him on at the top of the key and have him dribble and try to score on ISOs, but those plays are so, you know, you can't really find a guy who's going to do that necessarily anyways. So,
yeah.
But just the general flare screens and the sets to get the snap sets on the sides, that's all exactly what they're doing for Boogie, and he can do those things.
And I think Mirotić is a very smart passer. I mean, he's not going to put up the same assist numbers as Boogie because he's not going to hold on to the ball as much and, have the ball as much. But he makes very good decisions, beautiful thread-the-needle bounce passes, knows guys on the perimeter. Like, he's a very capable passer in a lot of ways. So I really think he's a great fit. In so many ways, I think maybe ideally I would want a slightly better defensive rebounder. I think we're going to see games moving forward where the Pelicans just get out-rebounded by certain teams on the boards and there's nothing they could do about it. But I think there's going to be games where Mirotić is on from outside and, you know, AD's on from everywhere where this team could be as dangerous offensively, if not more so, than they were with Boogie, because on a night where Mirotić is on, he could give you similar offensive production, but without the turnovers. So that'll be interesting. Before we get on to the games coming up, though, I want to know which game made you happy or you enjoy more. The Brooklyn game, which we won, or the Indiana game?
Which we didn't play?
Right.
The Indiana game, because I just kept waiting for it to start, and I went and did other things until I realized it was postponed. And then I realized, well, hey, it's going to be nice because our team will actually have some practice before they actually play Indiana. And Oladipo was playing anyways, so it wasn't a reason to play that night for us.
Yeah, no, I actually enjoyed that Indiana game more than the lone win we've had. Over the last week or so, I enjoyed, watching the tarp. I got excited about them maybe pouring Flex Seal all over the arena, and getting that game going. But I think that night I had more joy than watching the Pelicans race out to a 28-point lead with 18 minutes left and find a way to almost blow it against the freaking Brooklyn Nets.
I will say there was one bit of horror, though, in that Indiana game. Oladipo wears short shorts. Did you see this?
Did not.
Like, Drew took a video of him warming up for the game before the game and posted it on Twitter. He's wearing short shorts. They're not like Larry Bird short shorts where they actually kind of like go up at the edges, but they're still like maybe an inch below the crotch. Like, this, what is wrong with him?
Oh, come on. I had the pleasure of watching, it might have been that same night, but I had the pleasure of watching the 1992 All-Star game with my wife one night this week.
Okay.
And Magic was wearing them, some of the other guys too. I thoroughly enjoyed it. Those guys move freely. Clyde Drexler with those lengthy legs running around. I enjoy the short shorts.
Before we move on, because we always have to have a million segues, you brought this up, and I went and checked it while you were talking. Other than Davis and Cousins, and Mirotić, I don't have the information for yet. Other than those two, name the one player who the Pelicans have given minutes to, or a decent amount of minutes to, who has a above-average rebound rate for his position. There's only one player on the team outside of Cousins and Davis.
Above average, good. Who else grabs rebounds on this team? And he's still on the team?
Yep.
Yeah,
I guess technically Oshik was here too, so.
Yeah, I honestly have no DeAndre Liggins.
Nope, Tony Allen.
Oh.
That's the only one. Every other player, even Diallo, who's like right at average, is a below average rebounder. So, yes, that's the answer. Everybody's asking why this team can't rebound. It's because they all suck at it. And it's not like this is unusual for their career. All of them are like this. Like, Drew's never been a good rebounder. Or Moore's never been a good rebounder. And Miller's never been a good rebounder. So, anyway, Rondo used to be a good rebounder.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and I'm sure, I mean, he did it the other night, obviously, to get a triple-double, so I'm sure he could do it, you know, when he needs to. Okay, well, yeah, just a quick update for you. It looks like the Utah Jazz are going to win their 87 straight in a row, so they're pulling in even closer to the Pelicans, but at least they beat another playoff team in the Blazers tonight, but this Jazz team is coming on strong, won 9 in a row, and they were doing it with offense before. Now they've switched gears, and now they're stopping everybody with their defense. So this should be fun to try to hold them off.
Yeah, them, the Clippers, and they beat Portland tonight, right? Was Portland they were playing?
Yeah, so.
I think the Pelicans are only down on them 1 in the loss column, but. All right, so coming up, we have our wonderful game tomorrow night, or tonight, if you're listening to this, probably on a Monday, at Detroit. Then Wednesday they come home and they get to play the Los Angeles Lakers. And then Friday they are at home against Miami. And then they are on the road again to Milwaukee on Sunday.
That's
the whole Miami and Milwaukee. There's a whole week in there, so I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. It's Detroit and Los Angeles, and then a long vacation.
That's right. 9 days off, unless, which I think I'm surprised they haven't announced already. I thought it would just be obvious to put that Indiana game in there at the end of the All-Star break, but we'll see about that. Yeah, Detroit and Los Angeles, and then the All-Star break. So, Detroit's had Blake for a couple of games now. He's not particularly efficient, but they won their first couple of games after the trade. They were looking good, and then now they've lost the two straight, including one against Atlanta today. So they'll be on the second of a back-to-back when they play us, but they're just a pretty thin team now trying to figure it out. I mean, they traded a couple players to get Blake. Plus, they have Reggie Jackson down. You know, they got Nelson and then James Ennis at the trade deadline for a little bit of depth. But they're a pretty thin team now, but they've, you know, they're starting to get some contributions from guys like freaking Reggie Bullock coming out of nowhere. He's basically playing now the way that Darius Miller was playing early in the year, where he's just hitting every three. And, you know, they really go as their main guys go. But the one that I've noticed that is, you know, completely hot and cold for them and they kind of go as he goes is Ish Smith, who was terrible today, but he's had some games where he's really been a spark plug for them. So they have a lot of players like that, like a kind of go either way surrounding Andre Drummond, who's basically going to give you 15 and 13 almost every game and just be consistent. And then Blake Griffin, who is still finding a way, you know, his way there, but killed the Pelicans the last time he played against them, just a couple weeks ago for the Clippers. So pretty interesting matchup. The Pelicans coming off a double OT game, but the Pistons off of second night of a back-to-back. So I think the rest thing is pretty negligible.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't really know where to go with this team or what to expect from them. I mean, Griffin and Drummond, if Boogie and Davis were around, Boogie and Davis has a edge, but I wouldn't even call it a huge edge. I think that it's like a comparable front court. So the Pelicans don't have Boogie, and both of them have kind of weak backcourts, and Drew should be able to destroy anyone he's up against, but we've seen how awful our defense can be just in general, so it's going to be a weird game. And you could tell me that Anthony Davis scores, you know, 48 points against them and the Pelicans, you know, win by 15. Or you could tell me that Anthony Davis scores 48 points against them and the Pelicans lose by 15. And I would be not surprised at either situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I think what I like about this matchup right now for where our roster's at is I think you could keep Rondo on the court a lot. I think that's what a lot of this is going to come down to. I think it's like if you got a matchup where you just can't play Rondo, then all of a sudden you've got to play Drew at the point, and that just seems to throw everything off as far as what the Pelicans do offensively. So I think when you're looking at games and going, man, can the Pelicans win this one? I think that's one of the first questions you ask yourself is this team going to expose Rondo? And I think in a lot of ways he'll be able to play in this matchup, so you know everybody else could kind of live in their true positions.
Yeah, it's a good point.
But the thing you've got to be terrified about is the rebounding. You know, if they really wind up crashing the boards, we've seen Davis and Drummond go head to head, and Davis could do whatever he wants on the offensive end because Drummond doesn't have the foot speed. But if Davis is going to have to be the one checking Drummond, I think the Pistons are going to get a lot of offensive rebounds. If you put AD on Griffin, you know, Mirotic's going to even have a tougher time with Drummond. So I really don't know what you do here. I would probably put AD on Drummond, and I know he's not going to like that, and he's going to take some lumps, but hopefully the rivalry that those two have just gets AD to another level, and he puts up a monster game.
Yeah. Los Angeles, they're kind of a...
Hold on, who's your random guy that's going to hurt us in this game? You got to give
Jameer
me one.
Nelson?
You think Jameer's just going to hit a couple pull-up threes?
Yeah, he's gonna come dribble down the court, and he's gonna nail, you know, just at their worst times, he's gonna nail three threes on us, and we're all gonna swear and curse and be like, you know, he used to do that for us just a few months ago, and we'll conveniently forget the fact that he did that, you know, in one game, and then we would have three games where he did absolutely nothing. But yeah,
I'm gonna go with Anthony Tolliver.
Okay.
I think that in minutes where Drummond's off the court, AD's going to cover him, and he's just going to be lazy and forget him a couple times, similar to what he did against who was the guy, and Trey Lyles a couple times, and Anthony Tolliver, we're going to look up, and he's going to be like 4 of 5 from three.
Okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
Calling out that's, Davis.
I mean, he does. When he's not covering a guy... Yeah. That he feels
especially
is on
the guy who goes and floats to the corner.
Yeah, he gets extremely lazy until the guy hits a couple, and then he gets all in his mess. But I think that Tolliver's going to hit a couple before Davis wakes up.
Okay. So one of the more entertaining things to watch is the Detroit guys talking about Langston Galloway and how this year Galloway has the best true shooting percentage of his career. But he regularly gets DNP CDs and doesn't get to play. And they're all mad because he's making $21 million over 3 years for them. And he doesn't even get to play even though he's playing as well as he ever has. Does Langston Galloway play against the Pelicans, or does he not?
I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Ben Gundy's the type that gets excited with his new toys, so he's going to play his new toys instead.
Okay. Let's talk about new toys. You know, the Los Angeles Lakers trade for Isaiah Thomas. He plays for them, and immediately they lose after having been on a four-game winning streak.
Yeah. Yeah, but Isaiah put up his 22-6, and he said he was revitalized. So
that's right.
Yeah, this is going to be, I mean, my question is just this Pelicans team, even if they're going against a terrible defense, do they have the weapons to put up 115, 120 points? Because that's what it's going to come down to. The Lakers are going to play at a fast pace. They're going to hit shots at different stretches, but they're going to play little to no defense. But if the Pelicans settle for the crap that they settle for instead of attacking the basket, and then if they're also having one of their off three-point shooting nights, like, this is a game the Pelicans could get blown out. But if they attack the rim and they're actually hitting their shots, like, you could score 130 points against this team. So, it's going to come down to the offensive end, and I'm just curious if this is one of the games where the Pelicans attack, 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 or if they do what they did in the Philly game and just settle all night long. I think that'll be the key to this game.
Okay. I think Brandon Ingram's going to be the guy who goes off on us. And he's an unusual choice for me. But I feel like him, he's really good at receiving the ball on the deep wing, slithering towards the basket and hitting like hook shots, short hook shots in the paint. And he can do that if the wing players that are playing against him are not particularly powerhouse or long, one or the other. And our wing players who tend to guard that position aren't either of those things. I just have a feeling that I'm not going to say he's going to go off for like 28 points or anything like that, but if he ends the night with 20, I think I'm not surprised at all by that.
Oh, I mean, that's how he's been playing recently. I think Ingram's really starting to finally hit his potential. So now that wouldn't surprise me at all. I don't know. It's weird. I never really get scared of the obvious guy that's going to beat us. But yeah, I mean, over his last four games, Ingram's just been fantastic and has actually been pretty good going back quite a ways. I think he's starting to figure it out, and he's definitely a scorer. Luckily, even though with all of his length, he doesn't really hit the offensive glass as much as he probably should. So that's what I'm worried about this game. It's just the Lakers playing with a bunch of energy, having a lot of depth, and throwing guys out there. And then
With Nance gone, like, who do you think is going to come in and crash the glass and tear this team? Like, I was looking at this, and I don't see Randall really as that impactful of a energy rebounder. So who is it on this team?
I mean, they did lose that. Lonzo probably won't play in this game either, and he could do that from time to time. So I just think that they do it with pace and energy, and, you know, I always question when the Pelicans play a team that they think they're better than, even though they shouldn't feel that about anybody anymore. They just kind of have this lethargic way about them. And, you know, the Lakers aren't going to do that. So, you know, Isaiah Thomas getting to the rim pretty easily and then missing, and then, you know, multiple guys there for the follow. So, yeah, I hope that this is the Pelicans' last game before the break. It's at home, and they just go all out knowing that they'll get 9 days off. But I just feel that more than likely it's going to be like a Sacramento at home situation where they play a crap team and maybe they get out to a lead, but then it whittles down. And then, you know, before you know it, the momentum is all on Los Angeles' side, and then you're in for a dogfight, and then it just comes down to luck at the end. So I'm hoping that's not what happens, but I have a fear they're not going to come out with the effort as they, you know, that they would if they were playing, say, Houston at home.
Okay. Make your predictions for these two games. At Detroit, at home versus Los Angeles, what are you taking?
I got a loss at Detroit and a win home against LA, which honestly I would take 1-1 at this point, and just crawl into the All-Star break.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to pick too. So, and I feel scared to do that and expect to 0-2 anyways.
It's not going to happen, but let's say that the Lakers bought out Isaiah Thomas, Brooke Lopez, and Channing Frye over the All-Star break. Rank for me in order, and let's say all of them wanted to come to the Pelicans for some reason. What order would you be interested in those three?
Wow. Brooke, Frye, Thomas.
Okay.
With Brooke being the one I'm most interested in.
And you would just start him and move Mirotić back to the bench, or that
one? No, I'd bring him off the bench.
Okay.
Yeah. I think Mirotić and Davis make a nice starting front line, and Brooke is there to give Davis the ability to sit on his butt a little bit more per game. like that's going to ever happen.
Yeah, right? Yeah, because we're gonna play Davis 36 minutes no matter what. Cut to 40 to 50 minutes played every game. Yeah, for me, it would actually be Isaiah Thomas. I know he's not the same and yada, yada. I look at this team and I see these droughts that they have. And for me, it's for the same reason every time. They don't have any creators. And eventually, like, over 100 and what do they usually have? Between 102 and 110 possessions in a game or something like that. Over all those possessions, just the idea that you're going to continue to move the ball and pass the ball and hit the right guy and play this kind of offense, to me, that's just not realistic unless you're a team like the Spurs. What's going to happen for stretches during the game is guys are just going to have to go out there and create. That's where, like, a Jamal Crawford, even though all the nerds will tell me his numbers, you know, aren't efficient and he's not that good at yada, like, the fact that you could just go for 4 minutes and put the ball in Jamal Crawford's hands and he could just do some crap and get up a couple of good shots and some days make them, other days make 40%, whatever, like, you're not going to go through as many huge droughts. The Pelicans have nobody like that. So what they have to do is on every single play in every single set, they've got to execute. And they don't crash the board, so they don't even get free points that way. They don't fast break, so they don't get easy free points that way. So every possession just has to be execution, making the right pass, dribbling in, not settling for this, not settling from that. And that's just not realistic. So I need a guy who for 10 to 20 possessions a game is just going to kind of break that and get off a decent shot. And some days he won't make it. Other days he'll make 8 of 9 and it'll completely spark me. But like this Pelicans team doesn't have that. And then we sit around and wonder why they blow these leads or why they have stretches against Philadelphia where they score 4 points in 7 minutes. And it's because it's just unrealistic to expect a team to just be all execution and no freelance, guys just going one-on-one and beating their man or getting easy baskets off of offensive rebounds or fast breaks. So, yeah, I would take Isaiah.
Okay. I just think he's kind of done this year. So.
Yeah. Yeah, but I would take Dunn. I would take Jamal Crawford right now, even though all the nerds would tell me how inefficient he is. I would take Carmelo right now. Like, I would just take a guy who could go and get a shot, because there is not a guy like that on this team.
Okay. Anything else you want to talk about?
The only other thing I wanted to talk about is what I've been thinking about lately, and I know we're probably way too far ahead, but you know, I think the assumption might be that this is a 1.5 year rental for Mirotić. I don't know if I believe that's the case. you know, as he becomes a free agent, when where this market kind of is, I don't know what he gets his next contract. If you had to guess right now, and we have no idea how the next 18 months are going to play out, but if you had to guess right now, what is Nikola Mirotic's contract when he hits free agency in the summer of 2019? What does he sign? How many years? How many dollars? Random guess.
Well, based on what we just saw Lou Williams get, Mirotic is younger. I would expect Mirotic to make somewhere in the range of 3 years, 45.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to get that much.
Okay.
I really don't. I mean, yeah.
So here's what I actually expect, and maybe I'm being stupid. I expect that this summer we hear about that they're working on an extension with him. If Boogie stays, then I think that we'll hear that. And if he goes, I definitely think we'll hear that. So
yeah. I don't know if that's in Mirotic's. I don't know if that's in his best interest. I mean, like, especially if Boogie stays, so then what? You are signing a contract to be a backup?
I think it's a little less likely. I think they're going to try to do it, though. I really think that that's what they'll try to do. So
yeah. No, I believe with where the market's going, I mean, I think he's a good player, but I also think he's, you know, a player in which a lot of teams have that position covered or could moving forward. And I do think, I mean, I know he's going to start now. I do think he is a great off-the-bench big. We've never seen him play more than 25 minutes per game. I would bet right now, if you set the over-under on what he's making annually right now, 12.5, I actually think his next contract is going to average less than the 12.5 he's getting right now. So anyway, I think with where the marketplace is, I think a lot of above average guys are more likely to stay put than moving forward. And I wouldn't assume so quickly that this is a year and a half rental for Mirotic. I think he could be a guy that sticks around for a while, and I hope he is.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that. I've only seen him for four games, and I'm happy with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and then everybody else, you got your Black Panther tickets yet, Ryan?
I do not. I will go watch it, but I'm always one of those guys who waits a couple weeks for the theaters to empty out a little bit and then go, because I don't like sitting next to people. People suck.
I kind of agree. All right, so next time we talk, we'll talk about the Pelicans' three-game winning streak and Black Panther.
That's right. So thanks, everyone, for listening to In the Know, and we'll be back.
Nobody builds 5G like Verizon builds 5G, because we're the engineers who built the most reliable network in America. And the more you do with 5G, the more building it right matters. The more your network matters. The more Verizon engineers going the extra mile matters. It's us pushing us. It's Verizon versus Verizon. 5G built right from America's most reliable network. Most reliable based on rankings from RootMetrics second half 2020 U.S. report of 3 mobile networks. Results may vary. Award is not an endorsement.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m., and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.